lot of weird comments happening today, and we're going to be sharing some of these with you. These are the stories that we just think you ought to see today.
It may ultimately collapse before Russia gets a chance to crush it. I mean, it's that bad inside Ukraine.
Is the ceasefire done? Is the MOU dead?
It's a very interesting question. To me, I think it's over.
He then went on to call the Iranians scum. Why would you say something like that in the middle of a negotiation? A lot of people are asking that question. We're asking that question. In fact, we're going to take you to the United States of America to ask that question of our guest who's there. This is the Sanchez Effect. Let's do it. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. And today I want to talk to you about something that we've been, that's been in the news a lot lately. It's called asymmetric warfare. What is it, right? It means distorting the war, right? It means an unconventional way of fighting a war. Not the way things are usually done, or some would even argue the way that things are supposed to be done on a battlefield. And I want to give you an example of exactly what we're talking about now by going over to the map and showing you something that's just happened recently. This is really kind of fascinating. Okay, we've been telling you about this. You've probably read about it somewhere. Unless you're living in the United States or like in the UK, there you're not allowed to know this. But Russia has just scored a very significant win right here, right? Right here in Konstantinovka, right? This is the battlefield. That's Konstantinovka that I'm showing you right now, which was taken over the weekend by the Russians. It's a very important victory. It's a significant victory from a military standpoint for the Russian army. An important defeat as well for the Ukraine military, right? Because what does it do? As you probably have seen in some of the reporting we've done here with Stanislav over the last, I think, couple of days, it's important because it's a gateway, right? It's the entry point that now opens the way for the Russian military to be able to do a pincer, essentially all the way up through Dushkova and coming down from Liman through Slavyansk and eventually taking Kramatorsk. So these three cities right here are key for the Russian military to be able to then continue and go all the way to the end of what is Donetsk, which makes up the Donbass, which is all the Russians really wanted in this war in the first place. All right. Here's what's happened now that's new. Ready? It is now being reported that the Ukraine side suffered extremely heavy losses here. They've just now documented the actual casualties. According to official casualty reports put out by the Russian Ministry of Defense, more than 13,500 Ukrainian soldiers were lost, right? About half of those, right, say 6,000 of those were killed, right? So what happens to them? You have all these bodies laying around, right? What happens to these bodies? This is where asymmetrical warfare comes in. So Ukraine is not playing by the rules of war because for them, and in many ways for the West, this war is more like, it's not so much a war for them. It's a show. It's a performance. It's about putting out the right marketing message. And when possible, distorting that marketing message. And remember, Zelensky is a master of this stuff. He's an actor. He's a media savvy guy, a storyteller. By the way, a damn good one. According to even Russians who used to watch him on TV, they say this guy was funny, really funny. So what is Zelensky doing? He doesn't want people around the world to know that Ukraine has just lost this town, this important city, Konstantinovka. He doesn't want people to know that. So when the Russians just recently, within the last 24 hours, offered to the Ukrainians to pause the battle so that they can come here and retrieve these bodies, these dead soldiers, right, and take them back to their families. Apparently, Zelensky said, "Niet, no, don't want them." He's refusing to come here and recover these bodies. Now, here's Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov talking about this very thing last night.
Regarding your question about the status of Konstantinovka, I think the best answer is the invitation our military extended to the Ukrainians to come to Konstantinovka and collect the bodies of their fallen servicemen. Ukraine refused, thus underscoring once again, as many have already commented, that it has no use for Ukrainians, living or dead. And, most likely, these will be written off as missing in action, so to speak. But such an invitation was given, and, characteristically, when about 20 foreign agencies learned of the invitation, they expressed a desire to go there and observe the ceremony. They would also have seen the state of Konstantinovka and who was in control, but the Ukrainian authorities deprived them of this opportunity.
Now, when you think about it, if you listen to his words, Lavrov's point is essential here because it addresses the nature of this thing we're talking about, asymmetrical, non-conventional approaches to war. First, because it defies, right, by not recovering the dead bodies of the soldiers, it defies the time-honored tradition that soldiers will not be left on the battlefield. They will be recovered. They will be returned to their families. That's not just a good line in a movie. That's not a John Wayne thing, right? This is a promise, and a promise that is supposed to be kept. Why? Morale. Morale is important in the military. It's an expectation that the people who are asking you to fight and die for your country will be there. They will care about you. They will support you. They will support your family to the bloody end. That's important. And that's something that's going to likely catch up to the Zelensky government in a situation like this, say most military experts. So let's talk about the second thing now. This is just as important as well. And this is the part that I think Mr. Zelensky is most concerned about. And frankly, let me say this again. He's good at this. He's good at messaging. He's good at public relations kind of stuff. Zelensky does not want the media to cover this story about Konstantinovka. He just doesn't. So what does he do to make sure the media is not there sniffing around and finding out that he's losing the battle on the front lines, right? He denies it. He denies the defeat. He denies the loss. He denies the existence of the bodies. He denies the families, their loved ones. And most importantly, and this is the crux here. He denies the Western media and other members of the media around the world, some of which are only too happy to go along with it or oblige, the opportunity to go into this area, send reporters, and show what's actually happened there in Konstantinovka, right? So from a military and from an ethical standpoint, it's obviously a horrible thing to do. Why would you deny that? Why wouldn't you go recover the bodies? Why wouldn't you let people know what really happened? Well, yeah, but from a media, from a messaging, from a marketing standpoint, something I know a little bit about, it's kind of brilliant. By the way, I've got a caveat for this that I want to share with you. Come over here. Let's talk about the map again. Let's talk about Konstantinovka again, because there's something else that's happening here. The Russians, who are much better at fighting than they are at messaging, by the way, you know what they're doing right now? The Russians are now sending in specially trained field recovery teams. You've seen them, the guys who wear like those white baggy uniforms, you know, looks like plastic all over them. They're now there trying to do a respectful retrieval of the bodies of their enemy combatants. So they're taking them and they're putting them in these plastic bags, right? All 6,000 bodies. And then they're going to put them in refrigerator trucks or cold storage trains that are already there, right? And keep them there in cold storage until the Ukrainians can eventually come and get them at some point in the future and take them back. And I guarantee you, Zelensky will make sure that this is done, likely at some point when nobody is paying attention. Again, to avoid the media coverage, to avoid having people see what may have happened here. He would prefer people are putting in their headline stories about drones that are hitting inside of Russia. See, that's asymmetric warfare. And again, it's a distortion of the facts on the ground, but it works. at least in, it, you know what, let me rephrase that. It works in the short run. You know, if any of you guys played football or basketball or whatever sport you played, you usually remember what your coach used to say. In the end, the winner wins because he played harder, played better, and it's what you do on the field. It's what you do on the court. It's what you do. It's how hard you train. It's not about gimmicks. It's not about tricks. That's why, I mean, in the end, at least according to different military experts who I have talked to, including U.S. Army Commander Doug McGregor, he says this kind of asymmetric stuff is cool, but it doesn't work. Because wars are won, he says, here, on the battlefield, right? It's not won on the stage, it's not won in Hollywood, it's not won on TV or in newspaper pages. It's won on the battlefield. And he says, this is McGregor last night, you're going to listen, you're going to hear him say it for yourself. He says, in the end, this, the truth about what's really going on, about what's happening in Ukraine, which is now being hidden by the media and by NATO and by the EU and by the New York Times and by CNN, this truth that's being hidden by the Western media will ultimately be exposed. And this is what he says it is.
It may ultimately collapse before Russia gets a chance to crush it. I mean, it's that bad inside Ukraine. They more and more desertions every day, larger numbers of units, more people leaving the country. Press gangs running out of control, trying to drag in anybody they can find. The population is angry, disgusted, fed up. They didn't want what Zelensky delivered. And now the country is largely destroyed. So Ukraine may collapse on its own at this point. But I don't... you're asking a very important question. The problem is most Americans aren't paying much attention to this.
He said, what will Americans do if Russia wins this war? And he said, most Americans aren't paying attention. And he's absolutely 100% correct. Because when it comes to matters of war, international relations and geopolitics, we Americans are by far the dumbest people on the planet. We are the dumbest people on the planet. Nobody compares. Nobody compares. I travel around the world and I talk to people. They know more about our politics. They know more about our past presidents. They know who our vice president is. Half America doesn't even know who the hell our vice president is. And Americans are made to be that dumb by our leaders and by our media. And they do it on purpose. So they can sell billions of dollars in weapons in places like Ukraine without anybody in the United States knowing where the hell Ukraine even is. Because they lie to us with story after story about it's all being done for our own good to protect us. Yeah, right. What did General Smedley Butler say? War is a racket, right? Hey, listen, that was true about 100 years ago back when he said it, and it's still true today. Except now it's been perfected even more. I would argue it is now precision guided. Speaking of the people who guide that racket, that lie, ladies and gentlemen, here they are.
NATO leaders gathered in Turkey on Tuesday with a message for Donald Trump. We are heeding the call to spend more on Europe's defense. The Ankara summit saw a series of big deals set out. Among the announcements was a plan to spend $4.5 billion on new early warning radar planes from Sweden's Saab.
You know, it's funny, what's happening at these Ankara NATO meetings is a, listen to these words, I'm going to be a little tricky here. It's a solution that is looking for a problem. Not a problem looking for a solution, it's a solution that is looking for a problem, right? They want to buy all this military equipment, even though they really don't have a place to use it. But then they'll look for a place to use it so that they have a reason to buy all that military equipment. It's a solution looking for a problem. And they're not even hiding it anymore. It's all about money. It's all about money. In fact, somewhere right now in a cemetery in Westchester, Pennsylvania, where he was buried, Major General Smedley Butler is turning over in his grave watching this disgusting money grab that I've been watching for the last couple of days. This is just a short clip. Actually, we could show you more. But it basically is... When I tuned in to watch what they were doing in Ankara, I was thinking, well, a lot of boring meetings. No. Most of the people there are not even leaders of countries. They're weapons manufacturers and makers of bombs and bullets, and they're all there doing deals, trying to get their military hardware sold and purchased. And they're pitching it, as you're going to see in this video, or just a short clip of it, like it's some big marketing, manufacturing trade show. It's crazy. Watch this. Yeah, those are videos that are being played all day long on the screen so all the leaders can see all the different cool equipment they can buy and they can write checks. Checks not with their own money, with my money, you know? With my money and your money if you're watching from somewhere in the West. It just does seem absolutely nuts. You'd think they'd be there talking about how they can make the lives of the people who live in their countries better. But no, they're planning to buy equipment. By the way, you think they don't get a kickback on all of this stuff from the bankers who organize these deals and the weapons manufacturers who make the weapons? Of course they do. Ugh. Pardon me for being mad. Joining us now from the NATO meeting is our correspondent, Yassim Ekin. Yassim, you know, maybe I'm crazy, but as I'm watching these NATO things, I wonder if from your vantage point, you're up close and personal, does it seem as shameless from your vantage point as it seems from our vantage point as well, that these guys are only trying to do deals and make money and they're not really all that interested in the welfare of their own citizens?
Yeah, Rick. It's difficult to pinpoint where to begin exactly, because leading up to the NATO summit, the biggest marketing scheme was that this would be a rebranding. NATO 3.0 was the specific choice of words used and essentially posted on billboards across the capital.
Yeah.
But looking at how things have progressed and looking at how the allies that have come together have announced what they're planning to do to work together, it has nothing to do with rebranding. The ideology remains the same, but the only difference is, of course, the money that's floating around. And it seems that the real winner out of this entire summit was U.S. President Donald J. Trump. European allies and Canada increased their spending by $139 billion in 2025 alone, with an increase of up to $70 billion for new defense equipment as well as advanced warfare systems, about $50 billion for Ukraine for 2026, and the same expected for 2027. So I missed the point as to how NATO was supposed to rebrand, but naturally it is safe to say that the main discussion here was, well, where does this money go and who gets the weapons?
I'd like to think that people are noticing this, and I think to some extent they are. We've got some video I'm going to show you now, and Gene's going to show that while you and I are talking. But these are a bunch of people out on the streets. They're protesting. They're calling this a, they're calling what NATO is doing a sham. Did you see that presence? Do you think these people care? Or is it just another one of these protests we show on TV and it doesn't really have an effect? Asim?
Go ahead. That I see it is very simple. Yeah. The people of the country, Turkey, is, I think, a case study above everything else.
Yeah.
We do know that there's been opposition all across the globe, but the Turkish Republic is a case study because it has been within, well, to a degree, under the protection of NATO for decades. But again, speaking to the people, they beg to differ. What kind of protection did NATO offer or European allies? Yeah. For many long years, the Turkish Republic, its armed forces, its air force was left to pick up scraps. Sanctions were applied. The transfer of arms and advanced warfare technologies was not a possibility until the Turkish Republic started to build its own defense industry. And then everything all changed. Now the Europeans, they want to be a part of it. The United States is reconsidering its position on the F-35 program. And let's not forget, the reason why this entire spat between Turkey and the United States happened is because the people or the republic was essentially delayed for time and time and time again. And that resentment has grown among the people. They don't necessarily trust NATO. Of course, the argument is there, suggesting that NATO could protect the country against conflict, but the people don't buy it.
But from where? Like Russia? Why would Russia attack NATO? Russia has no interest... pardon me. Russia has no interest in attacking Turkey. I mean, Russia has never had an interest in attacking Turkey unless you go back, you know, what, hundreds of years. So it just seems like, once again, you know, it's a solution looking for a problem. By the way, while Russia is not attacking Turkey and is not attacking any countries in NATO, NATO is attacking Russia. And here's Marco Rubio, a guy I grew up with, by the way, talking about this. Here he is.
Ukraine deliver alone strikes on Russian military factories and on oil refineries, and they ran out of gas.
Marco, why don't you answer that? Because you're right in the middle of it.
Yeah, no, I think what you're discussing is the ability of Ukraine to reach deep inside of Russia and conduct strikes.
Sure.
I think that's one of the dynamics that's changed in this war over the last few months, and that is that Russians are finding it more difficult to defend their own airspace. And what we hope that means is that it's going to create the space now to negotiate the end of this war.
It's an escalation, but it's also an escalation that can help lead to an end.
I would imagine, Yassim, that you were not in that news conference, because I know that if you would have been in that news conference, you would have corrected that young lady who asked the question, and you would have said, no, they're not just striking military targets and oil refineries. They're hitting civilians, they're hitting buses, they're hitting schools, they're hitting other things that are completely civilian targets. And then you probably would have reminded my friend, Mr. Rubio, who I grew up with, that those bombs that are killing those civilians are American bombs. Because, you know, it's funny the way they phrase things. So they leave all the news out of their statements, don't they?
That is correct. And I would have even taken it a step further and included the fact that the war is not just limited to Russian airspace or Russian territories. The war has expanded and essentially lost focus, even in a sense, and has endangered the commercial and the livelihood of neighbors in the Black Sea. Every few weeks or so, we hear news about explosives and drones washing up on Turkish shores. The Turkish government is quiet about it, for whatever reason that is, but that does not, of course, deny the fact that this happens. People are at risk. Civilians are at risk. And the U.S. president, Donald Trump, actually said something along those lines as well when he said that the United States would give Ukraine the license to produce patriots, was that he hopes that he could force President Putin to sit down at a table and put an end to this. But it also suggests that the United States, European allies, NATO as a whole, just does not understand a single thing. Despite the many years of conflict, they are repeating the same lines.
In fact, I want to play something for you now. Gene, we're going to skip two and go right to cut three, okay? Here is Volodymyr Zelensky joking about using his drones to kill people and hit civilians in Russia. And when he makes this joke, the audience laughs about it. They think it's funny that Russians are dying at the hands of NATO and at the hands of Volodymyr. You got to see this, because it'll make you as mad as it made me. I don't know. Watch.
President Putin said, I would love to meet in Moscow. And I said, I don't think, you know, I have to put myself in this position. I don't know that he'd go to Moscow. Maybe he would. Would you go to Moscow?
It's difficult. There are a lot of Ukrainian drones there. That's right. It's dangerous. It's dangerous.
I mean, that's disgusting. First of all, he's a comedian. And you know damn well that the first rule in comedy is test your material. He knew what he was going to say. This is not a joke that just came out of his head at the last minute. He knew this question was coming, and he had an answer prepared, and he knew it was going to be funny because he knows how to deliver funny lines. And he planned a joke at the expense of Russian civilians. And the people in this audience laughed at it. like it's funny. Oh, yeah, by the way, dead Palestinians, they're funny, too. And if tomorrow Turks are killed or hit by bombs, that's hilarious. No, it's not. You don't laugh about stuff like this. I'm sorry, Yassim. You're supposed to be the one supporting, but it just makes me a little crazy.
Fair point. No, fair point. Fair point. Civilians. End of discussion.
It shouldn't
be a joke.
Here's Trump now calling his opponents in Iran, who he apparently is still negotiating with, but they're not as interested in negotiating with him as he is in negotiating with them, because they're winning the war. Some would argue they've won the war. So here's how Trump now characterizes them while they're still in the middle of a funeral burying their exalted leader. Listen to Trump's words.
Is the ceasefire done? Is the MOU dead?
It's a very interesting question. To me, I think it's over. I don't want to deal with them anymore. They're scum. You know what scum is? They're scum. They're sick people. They're led by sick people. And they're vicious, violent people. And if they had a nuclear weapon, they'd use it. As far as I'm concerned, it's over. I'll speak to our negotiators. They want to negotiate. They're good people. Steve Witkoff, Jared Kushner. But they have to come back to me. As far as I'm concerned, it's just a waste of time dealing with them. They're liars. We make a deal. And if I make a deal with him, we have a deal. And he goes out, he talks. We make a deal. Everyone's agreed. No nuclear weapon. We make a deal. They go outside, talk to the press. They say, we never even talked about it. There's something wrong with them. They're cuckoo.
This is, like, so incredible. This is the guy who canceled the JCPOA, talking about them walking out on a deal. Mr. President, you walked out on the deal. They had agreed to never have nukes, and you killed that deal. And now you're criticizing them for walking out on a deal? I mean, this is a Fellini movie we're watching here. This is Crazyville. What's been the reaction to that comment? It was kind of shocking to hear a president talk like that, no?
Shocking is one way of putting it, but it also highlights the disconnect and disregard for any kind of human decency when it comes to anyone outside of, well, the United States, and when it comes to remarks made by European leaders. The same applies for Europe as well. Russia, Iran, and maybe new to the discussion to a degree might even be Turkey, that, you know, as long as these people are in the mix, they're not as important as we are. That's the takeaway that I'm essentially trying to wrap my head around. And if you recall, last we spoke, I was in Switzerland following the peace talks, or the, well, attempt to hold a peace talk between the United States and Iran.
Right,
he asked me why the U.S. delegation consisted of the same people that were there the first time, that were essentially, well, not trusted by the Iranian delegation. And in hindsight, I could tell you, well, it's probably because the United States was never really in a position to strike a deal in the first place.
Yeah, they're not. Yeah, this is all foreshadowing of what Mr. Trump really wants, and that is to take care of his friend Bibi Netanyahu, who he's still being pressured to deal for. All right, final question, and I think maybe this is the headline that everybody else is talking about, and you and I are sticking it at the very end because we cover all the news, not just the story they want to cover, and that is this little. This little tiff between NATO and Mr. Trump. Some people are saying, oh, they're back together again. Oh, I've read other reports that say Trump is slamming them and that he's walking away from NATO. How is this ending up? Is Trump in? Is he out? What's going on between Trump and NATO right now?
I think the U.S. foreign policy kind of resembles Turkish foreign policy. They are kind of in, they are kind of out. It's difficult to really understand. But let's not forget, the European allies in Canada did increase their spending by about $130 or $139 billion in 2025 alone. So the biggest argument from President Trump was they need to do more spending. I don't want to take the brunt of it. But they have been doing that. And the remarks over these past few weeks and months, this past year, suggests that the United States or President Trump is not interested in essentially, well, in a degree, leading the NATO alliance.
But this also does mean that he likes the perks that come with it.
Yeah.
The way that he was welcomed by the Turkish president, the way that he was hosted, I think is a telltale sign. But I think this goes beyond President Trump. I think this is a matter of U.S. foreign policy, which, again, I think it boils down to issues in the U.S. law system or the legal system. The U.S. security cooperation with Israel, the QME or qualitative military edge that is legally binding to provide Israel an edge in the region. And even within the context of the NATO summit wasn't necessarily as important as the bilateral meetings between said states were. Hmm. So moving forward, it's just as important to understand that the U.S. president at this point in time is in and he's out.
Yeah.
It just really depends.
And he's just there as a military contractor. He just sees NATO as clients and he wants to sell them a bunch of crap because he can make a lot of money off that stuff that he is selling them. That's what it looks like, and I may be wrong, but that's I think that's a fair analysis, judging his actions and his words. Finally, I said finally before, but I'm going to say finally this time. I got to ask you about Erdogan. This guy's an interesting character. I don't know whether he's coming or going. I don't know what he's really all about. Sometimes it's hard not to like him, at least in terms of his language. But in the end, whose side is he really on? What's this guy fighting for? What makes this guy tick?
Ooh, that's a good question. And the reason why it's a good question is not because I'm trying to stall for time, but nobody really knows. If I were to simplify the argument, I would suggest that he is specifically looking out for Turkish interests. And to a degree, that makes sense. But again, with the procurement of the F-35s, if that essentially goes through, that will be major. Let's not forget, recently, the United Kingdom, Turkey, and Gulf states signed agreements regarding the Eurofighter Typhoon.
Yeah.
Modernization kits for the existing F-15 and F-16 kits and fighter jets will be just as crucial. And the introduction of a fifth-generation fighter jet, the Khan, would also change air superiority. So it seems that the Turkish president is trying to build a military. This doesn't necessarily mean that Israel is right or the government would suggest that Turkey poses a threat. May not necessarily reflect the truth, but the one thing that it does reflect is the Turkish president smells blood, and he doesn't want to be essentially cornered and go down without a fight.
What do you mean?
That's
smells?
My takeaway.
What do you mean smells blood? What do you mean by that? From Israel?
Let's not just take into consideration the conflicts over the past few years, the last few decades, from the Balkans to the Middle East to the Black Sea, even pressure in the Mediterranean, yeah. The current standing in NATO, EU-Turkey relations. It's safe to say that much of the resentment from the protesters that we've seen is also a thought in President Erdogan's mind. Sure, on the surface, he says that he may or may not trust his counterparts. But the one thing is that he doesn't necessarily trust his counterparts to be there for him when he needs them, despite the fact that Turkey is a part of the NATO alliance. The understanding from the Turkish president to the people that are protesting out in the streets, the mindset is the same.
Yeah. No, and you're right. He looks left, he sees a war. He looks right, he sees the beginning of a war. He looks, you know, up, he sees more of the missiles that are being fired from his neighbors to another country across the way. Yeah, he is in the thick of it. And I think that's a really good point that you make. You're the best, Yassim. Always enjoy my conversations with you. Stay cool. And next time, stay a little bit further away from the street when we have a conversation. Thank you, my friend. When we come back, we're going to talk. I feel like he was going to. I kept looking at these buses going by. I'm like he was about to be hit or something. Stephen Eugene Kuhn is going to be joining us. He's a retired combat veteran. He's the founder of Take America Back. I love those words. It's a movement, maybe more like an awakening that's taking place right now all over the United States as we speak. And we're going to be talking about that when we come back. We have covered so much in the last 36 minutes, and we're just getting started. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. you know, we're so glad that you're there. We're talking about what's happening right now in Europe, specifically at these NATO meetings in Ankara, Turkey, where it seems like there is, I think it's like an effort underway to simply create more wars or create the impression that there's a need for wars. Maybe that's a better way of saying it, so that the politicians can then come together with their bankers and their friends who make money by making weapons, and they can get more and more profits in the meantime. I mean, it's so obvious that's what's happening. It's a pretty shameless display that we just witnessed in our reporting. And I want to bring in somebody now who knows a little bit firsthand about this, because he's a retired combat veteran. He's been in these conflagrations. And now he is spearheading something called Take America Back. God bless that. Stephen Eugene Kuhn is good enough to join us now to talk to us about this situation. Thank you for your service, and thank you for taking time to talk to us.
My pleasure, Rick. Thanks so much for having me.
So what do you make of these cats out there in Ankara, these NATO guys? It looks like a banker's convention to me. I don't know what you think of it.
Yeah, it's a conference to sell weapons. That's all it is. That's basically all it is. It's a corporate meeting of corporate heads. Who's the highest bidder? Who gets what? How are we going to split up the pie? And if we look at Europe specifically, NATO, because NATO is basically Europe as far as the major states go. You know, the European leaders need this war. Why? Because there's no industry in Europe that's turning a profit right now besides the defense industry. And they need this war to cover up their economic mistakes, all the failures they've had, and to justify tightening control in the name of security for the war. And then, of course, you have Zelensky, who's the endless pit, you know, the bottomless pit of money. He's basically the straw man CEO for the corporation of Ukraine, right? Which is not owned by Ukraine. And in my opinion, Ukraine doesn't exist anymore as a sovereign state. It's now a corporation run by, I would like to use the word, but I won't use it, but run by a joker.
Well, you know, this plays into what you're all about. And let me congratulate you once again for Take America Back. God, if ever, God, please hear my words. There's been a time when we need those three words to actually become an action and not just an idea. It's right now. Right. Because of what you were just talking about. I mean, these guys we just saw, you know, I call them bankers. You call them what you call them, but we know they're not there. What they're not doing is they're not looking for the interest of their people. And no. I could say the same thing about your Congress, my Congress, and our Senate, and our cabinet, and our politicians, even at the state level. And that's the biggest problem that you and I as Americans face right now, I think.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And you know, all politics start local. And so that's what Take America Back is all about. We're about going into local seats. Did you know there's over 100,000 empty, vacant precinct seats right now all across America? And there's about 200,000 in total, including those precinct seats, of vacant local political seats.
Jesus.
And 70% of all local governments, of over 500,000 seats in America, run uncontested. That means one person shows up. So if a citizen servant leader shows up, they have a 50% chance of winning before they even open their mouth. And it's because we're passive, we're latent, we're busy. You know, we got to take the dog to the vet. We got to take the kids to soccer practice. We got to go to school, got to go to work, all these kind of things. So Americans are always waiting for someone else to do it. Well, that time is over, or we will be done. We will be done. It's time for us to step up, and therefore I've created a 5-book doctrine. You know, the Federalist Papers were written to ratify the Republic. I wrote the doctrine to defend the Republic. And what it does is it takes you through five levels of learning how to become a citizen servant leader, how to avoid corruption, how to recognize and protect yourself against misinformation, how to become financially free, healthy, and resilient. And once we have that, we'll have a parallel infrastructure of accountability. So the goal is eventually not to be voting for Democrat, Republican, or Independent. You're voting if someone is TAB, Take America Back, TAB certified or not, because they're going to get on a list once they get certified. And this way, we're building a parallel structure. We're not going head on. We're not attacking them. They're not even paying attention to us yet, really. But once we get to the point where that infrastructure is so strong, it will automatically take over. And as the standard for honesty, integrity, transparency, accountability, and moral courage.
Sign me up. I'll help you. We'll help you. I mean, let me know when your booklet's ready, when you're ready to announce the formation of it.
Ready. It's ready. Rick, the books, I'm selling about 1,000 books a month without even trying.
What's it called?
Take America Back. It's jointab.us.
Got it.
There, you can sign up. You can sign up for the course. You can buy the books on Amazon. I have two free books that I only give away because on the website, we have Find Your Seat at the top. You click on the link, it drops down. You put in your zip code, and it shows you the vacant seats that are listed in your zip code. And you can click on them and apply immediately. And sometimes within a day or two or a week, you're
great.
In a seat.
This
you're
is
in a
great.
Seat.
This is
and
great.
Then I have two books. The first book is How to Take the Seat. The second book is the first 90-day playbook once you're in the seat. Because we have people showing up to say, Stephen, I don't know how to be a politician.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, that's good because we don't need politicians. We need representatives. Remember what that stands right. for. Representatives represents the people. All you need to do is, what are they saying? Go do it. That's the whole job. It
yeah,
isn't politics, raising funds, this, that, and the other.
It's not about what you get. It's about what you give. The people
that's
who
right.
formed our country. Right? The forefathers of America worked their butts off. Some of them would travel for days by wagon and by horse. By the time they got there, their crotch was completely raw just so they could go from Georgia to Philadelphia on a horse. Can you imagine that? And while
remember,
they were gone, their farms would go bankrupt. They would lose money. They weren't there to make money.
Exactly. And every single one of them had a business, had a farm, had a job, had something that they were doing in order to earn money to be able to live. Because politics or representative is not a place where you're supposed to be making a career. Well, that's turned around and we need to turn that around. Look, it's real simple, Rick. I did the math. We have 3,144 counties in America.
Right.
If we have 10 seats per county from TAB certified citizens, citizen servant leaders, that's 31,144 Americans. That's 1 in 8,000 American adults, or 1/100th of 1%. That's all we need to take America back. 31,144 people. That's it.
I hope in your instructions to my fellow Americans and yours, you're telling them rule one, go to your TV and turn off CNN and Fox and all those other damn cable channels because they're full of crap and they're lying to you every day and making you stupid.
I have an entire book dedicated to that called Information Warfare. It's number four in the doctrine. It tells you all about it. And every single book is filled with personal stories, how the CIA tried to recruit me, Opus Dei tried to recruit me. They tried to recruit me as a senator, all of the corruption I went through. I founded a civic organization in Germany, which is now the AFD. The head of the AFD is my partner. It's
really,
really. I've been in politics since 2003 behind the scenes. And this is the first time I'm breaking out and doing something for my fellow citizens. I've always done it for others. I've done it for, I worked with Orban. I worked with, I can't say what I worked with, but I worked with Viktor Orban. I worked with the German government, the European Parliament, the British Parliament, the Croatian Parliament. And I've helped them form and structure, programs and policy.
Only because you said that, and I'm just going to jump all over, do you think the AFD is going to win in Germany?
If they don't win this time, they'll win next time.
That's big.
Yep.
That's big.
It's huge. It's huge. And there's only one reason for that, because the foundation is so strong and the people that are involved are so dedicated to this movement. They're not in it for profit. Matter of fact, my partners and myself have never taken a dime unless they're in office for anything. I've never took a dime for any of my advisory, any of my consulting, anything in politics. Because once you take money in politics, you're leverageable. So we have to have jobs and careers and businesses in order to earn a living so that we could do the proper type of politics, if you want to call it that. By the way, Rick, I can't see you. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to see you or not.
I'm really ugly anyway. You don't want to see me. but you can hear me, right?
Yes.
Actually, I'm having kind of a good hair day. I don't know.
You're actually quite handsome, Rick, so let's not go there.
So, by the way, this is important. The people that you want to join, you're not looking for lefties. You're not looking for righties. You don't care. You want people who are going to bring discussion points, right?
Exactly. Honesty, integrity, transparency, moral courage, and accountability. Those five standards, that's what you bring.
Because this thing, because this thing in America where, they've divided us into these two camps where you got to be a D or an R and you got to be a liberal or a conservative, that's bull crap. I mean, I'm liberal and I'm conservative. It depends on what you asked me, right?
Exactly. I mean, I like to compare myself to like a 1980s Democrat, a conservative Democrat, right?
Yeah.
That's basically what a middle of the road is right now, isn't it? And then you have, put it this way. If you're triggered, left or right, if you're triggered, good or bad, you're still triggered. And that's the whole thing about propaganda, talking points, and, all these kind of things that we got to watch out for. In the end, we can only affect what we can touch. The only reason I talk about international politics all the time is because that fractal, that pattern that we see happening, it happens in your city council and your school board and your library board, your county commission. We need to recognize these things on the world stage where it's on the camera. So when we go to our town hall meeting, we can see exactly what patterns are happening there and we can break those patterns.
Well, and the other thing, especially with these never-ending wars, like, what the hell does a guy living in Kansas with a farm or a beautiful family, how do his children benefit from the, $500 billion that we have sent to, for example, Ukraine? Just picking one of the many wars out of a hat here. Yeah. I don't see it. It's like,
they don't benefit from it. All it is, it's an emotional, sort of journey. They go, oh, we have to help my wife is Ukrainian. We took her parents out of Ukraine when the war started. They're still here, right? So my wife has family who have fallen in battle in Ukraine, right? We have neighbors. She has neighbors that were kidnapped off the street. Wow. So this is near and dear to me. So It's all emotional. Just like Zelensky is there playing the role that he's supposed to be playing, we have people in America playing the role. Lindsey Graham is one of them, although he's become very crass and straightforward. But, it's all a role. I'll tell you how it affects them. Higher taxes, less money, higher gas prices, higher food prices. That's how it affects them. The things that matter to Americans will not be changed if we just elect another president or elect another congressman or elect another senator. We have to elect local officials because, look, Raytheon factory, it's in a town. That town hall, that city council, that county commission, they decided to put that factory there. They decided to give them a tax, a 20-year tax break. We have the control. We're one of the last countries on the planet that has control. The citizens, we are the republic, period.
Yeah, well, there's one problem that we have.
What's that?
You and I.
What's that?
It's a big problem.
Oh, yeah.
The incentive to be corrupt is amazing in America.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much money in the system, and it's legal. You literally can go and find a judge who's running for office, give her $500,000 or whatever the hell, find a way to give her money. And then a month later, after she gets elected, you can go there and she will rule on your behalf. And I would say the same thing about members of Congress and your mayor. And this. So we've got to change the laws to make it impossible for politicians to be able to take money. Because until we do that, it's a game. They're not being elected to serve us. They're being elected because they're going to see how much money they can put in their pockets. And it's legal. They don't go to jail for doing that.
Absolutely. Plus the slush funds and everything else going on.
Yeah.
There's a way to do that. And that's why the math is important. 31,444 people, 144 people. I would beg to differ that there are 31,000 people out there that are honest. And look, I've, to my own detriment, have turned down money multiple times, even for TAB. I've been offered TAB funding from certain organizations that I've turned down to my own detriment. Hmm. But there's a line that you cross. Once you cross that line, you no longer have integrity, even with yourself. And some people care about that. I know I care about that. And so there's nothing that you can give me. There's nothing that you can give me to make me give up and sell myself out. They've tried over and over and over because I've had, multiple organizations and places where we actually gained a lot of influence.
Yeah.
So I'm sure, and I know there's 31,440 people out there that we can count on to do this. We just need to get them, empower them, train them, and get them to understand the doctrine and then get going. And another tip is this, don't vote for any incumbents. Just vote for somebody other than the incumbents. That's a good way to flush a system right there, first of all. The hardest part
is
the judicial system. The hardest part is the judicial system. That's going to be difficult.
Yeah, I've seen recently it is crooked as hell right now.
Yeah.
I mean, a law firm can come in and own a judge.
They're appointing judges now that aren't even, they don't even have degrees of any kind. As a matter of fact, in Pennsylvania, they just appointed a judge who just got out of prison.
It's just my buddy. I got my friend Leroy over here. Leroy, you want to be a judge? Sure, why not? Okay, we're gonna run you, and we're gonna put all the money down, and you're guaranteed to win. Now, when you get there, Leroy, you got to make sure that everything we ask you to do, you do now, right? He's gonna go, yeah, sure, no problem. Okay, just give me enough beer.
I get a free ride, get some money, I get to wear a robe and look important.
That's
and
crazy.
Unfortunately, Well, unfortunately, our society has put people in a place where everyone needs money. Everybody's broke. Even the high rollers, they're all living on credit. You know, we have more debt in America than we have, you know, than we have anything else. And debt is a weapon. And a debt can be leveraged against you. If you're being told you either do this for 500 grand or you're going to lose your mortgage, your credibility, you know, your ability to send your kids to college, most people will bend there. Look, Rick, it got so bad with me. I was homeless in 2008.
Really?
Homeless in 2008 because I refused all of this BS. And people told me I was nuts. I was crazy. I'm going to kill myself. Why are you so stupid? You could be rich right now. Right. But I didn't do it. And that's why I can stand here like an oak tree. You come at me as you will. You won't win. Yeah. We're going to win. We're going to take America back, period. That's it.
What do we do about Israel?
Israel. Well, you know, I think, and I know we might disagree on this, but if I look at what happened now with MOU and how Trump didn't include Bibi into the negotiations and then he told him to stand down, he didn't anyway, and everyone knew he wouldn't. And now you see what's going on now with Turkey, where Israel was bad-mouthing Turkey like many ways. And of course, Erdogan, he doesn't bend. He doesn't bow. He plays both sides.
Yes.
Right? He's a very, very strong leader.
He's got deals let me tell you something. I went there. I covered it. He's got all kinds of deals with Israel. He blasts Israel publicly, and then he's having meetings with them on the side that nobody knows about.
Yeah. And it's I mean, I'm in Turkey right now.
Oh, cool.
You know, so he's, you know, look, he bought the S-400s and they said, oh, you can't have the F-35s. He's like, all right, no problem. I'll get them eventually. And now he's getting them. He just has to give away the S-30, the S-400s. It positions itself. Erdogan is very good at positioning himself in the middle. He's been the narrator. He's been the mediator. And I bet you right now, Trump and him are talking about speaking to Iran because Erdogan has a backdoor to Iran. Right.
Oh, no.
And
yeah.
Of course,
yeah. No, he
does. I don't know if that's even going to help because the IRGC is just still in the old mosaic mode. And no matter what the Ayatollah says, the IRGC does what they want to do, as we saw yesterday when they struck those three ships.
Listen, I love Israel as a country. I've been there. Great friends. Respect in many ways what they do. All I am saying and all I think most Americans are now saying is stop telling us what to do. You're too small to be telling us what to do. Don't show up in Congress wearing an IDF uniform. That's disrespectful. Don't have the Prime Minister of Israel in the Situation Room leading a meeting. That's disrespectful. And stop giving so much money to the people who run our country. That's it. Those are the only requirements. Yeah. I mean, I think those are reasonable, aren't they?
I absolutely agree. I don't care what size the country is. That shouldn't be happening.
Right.
I don't care if it's big or small, you know. So it's I think the conflation is you have Israelis, you have Jewish, you have Zionists, and then you have the biblical Hebrews is what I call them. They're the original Jewish, right? And they're all against what's going on right now, the biblical Hebrews. I don't want to be against anybody. What I want to do is find a solution. And the problem that we have in our society today, and you're looking at it right now in NATO, no one's looking for a solution. They're all looking for more money, more leverage, ways to gain more power, ways to gain leverage together, separately, against them. No one's looking for solutions anymore. If you're if you're not looking for a solution, you're part of the damn problem. Everyone knows that. So Israel, I get blasted when I say something about Israel because I have a lot of Israel. I have business partners that are in Israel.
Yeah.
And I said, look, I'm talking to you as Citizen Joe. When I look at my Senate and my Congress, I want to see Americans in there.
Yeah.
Right. And that has nothing to do with being nationalist or whatever.
Right.
I'm an American for the people, you know, by the people.
No, I know what you mean. You don't mean Americans like they have to be white and freckle faced. You mean they have to care about America. That's what you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
Totally get
none of this socialist Democrat bullshit. None of that.
I don't care if they're black or white or green or whatever the hell they are. Be what you are, but just represent your community. And I think in the end, that is what is most important. Boy, what a great conversation. I'm so glad that we reached out to you again. Take America back. Where do people reach you? How do people join? What do they do? Tell us.
Go to jointab.us. You can sign up for the course that's coming out. It's written according to all three certification bodies in America, so it will be university certified here sooner or later. You take that course, you have the entire doctrine of five books that you go through, and then you're certified as a TAB citizen servant leader. And when you step up, you'll be on that list. And when someone can vote, Democrat, Republican, or TAB certified, if they know anything about TAB, they're gonna go to TAB certified. So you can support us there with a monthly $6, $12, $48 if you want. You can do a one-time sponsorship. You can buy the books on Amazon. You can write me directly at info@jointab.us. On Twitter, my account got hacked, so I'm back down to 300 people. So I'm on jointab_US.
It happens to the best of us. Trust me, I've been demonetized. They go after the good guys usually more than they do anybody else. What a pleasure. Thanks so much. Really enjoyed the conversation. Let's stay in touch. And, keep up the good work. Make us proud.
Thank you, sir.
I love the idea. This is great. Take America back. Wow. Isn't that something? I'd love to see it happen. I mean, never before. And I mean, I'm an old man. Never before in my life have I seen America so vanquished from an ethical standpoint in terms of what its direction is. Never before have I seen America in a position where the leaders think less about the people that they're supposed to represent. That's just a God's honest truth. I'm sorry. I got to say it. So there it is. That's it from us. Thanks so much for being with us. You can obviously see much of this will be cut up. You'll see part of the interviews and part of what we did today on X. Boy, there's a lot there. Our social media department's going to have their hands full. They're going to be working all night. You can also see us on Spotify. And check out BitChute. I like BitChute because BitChute makes you a guarantee when you join that they will never demonetize you, they will never make your material content disappear, and that they will never cancel you. And the rest of them do that all the time. Again, it's happened to me. Thank you most of all for letting us into your homes. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll be looking for you next time.